Accession number 9364, Reel 18.
Mr. Bethel, Reel 18. Can you tell me what your daily routine in the prison would be like?
Yes, it was a huge prison. Well, three-storey, which is quite big. And you drilled the men in the morning, locked them up at night. In the afternoon, they would pick coir, which I thought was waste. Because you had to get these men to be disciplined, mentally disciplined, not by force, as I see it. You had to reason them into sense so that they behaved themselves. There was one Marine, he came in repeatedly, until one day he saw my wife and children when he was on fatigues, delivering coal to the quarters. And he said, "I'll never come back again, staff." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well," he said, "I've seen your wife and kids," he said, "and you're obviously happy, and it's just possible for me to marry a young girl and still be in the Marines." He never came back anymore, just like that. This, I would believe, is by example. And I realised, and had realised, for a number of years what was going to happen. And it was obvious. What with the Italians coming up and down the Suez with their men going to Utopia, and all that kind of thing. And you knew what was going to happen. It was obvious. And therefore, I used to lecture them on what would happen. There were maps in the prison which were never used. All they did was stand and pick this coir. And no mental message was being pushed through. And these chaps, I know one Irishman said, "The trouble with me is I got no education," which was funny. And so on. You had to make them realise that we were doing our best for our country. However, this...
What sort of offences had they committed?
Well, absolutely. One chap went to... got on a liner going to... I think I said this. I don't know whether I have or not. He got on this liner and he heard somebody in there. He was deserting. And he thought he was going back to England. And he heard somebody say, "Victoria." And he thought, "Yeah, Victoria Station. That's where I'm going." But the woman was going to Australia, going to the steadily towards Alexander and Port Suez and all that way.
What sort of sentences would they have?
Or 90 days or 28 days or maybe less. 28 days at least, I think. During this time, you wanted to stop them, make them a part of the team, which we were, and make them law to authority, or reason with authority. Getting drunk. One chap, he used to sing, and he had a fight with another bloke over the singing or something, and, you know, ridiculous things. But in the main, the Irish were different. We had the Royal Irish Fusiliers there, and I felt that their problem was quite something. Knowing history, knowing the predicament of the Irish today. And eventually I had six of them interned under me, which was awful. I didn't like it. They were probably our finest fighting men. Always ready for a fight, the Irish. And you had to try and understand what had been taught from children to them, especially people in the Roman Catholic region were taught to hate us particularly, I think. And you had to eradicate this somehow or other. Say, "Well, this is, I think possibly in the corn famine, we could have done more than we did. And I think we are partly to blame."
What happened to the more serious offenders in Malta?
Well, the more serious ones, well, they would have been sent home. We had some very serious ones. Just prior to the war, the enemy resolved that if they could find out where our first aid posts were, they would know where our posts were to protect the island. And we had one chap photographed handing over all these positions of the various first aid posts by Captain Honor Royal Marines. He was sent up and he was given quite a period. I think they sent him home in the end. But Jock Harrow, my tennis partner with the garrison, was also the intelligence chap, Sergeant Major Intelligence. He spoke German fluently and that, you know, clever. And of course, the civil troubles would have been to do with the Maltese government itself, the civil prison, where I eventually finished up. I took over the civil prison during the internment period. But
when was that?
Just after the war with Germany, about 6 months afterwards, or maybe a year afterwards. But page 6. I went to Malta, and that was heaven to me, to be able to see my wife and children.
What were your movements within the prisons? You started off in the detention prison.
I started off as one of the warders. And then the war was declared with Germany, which was a leaflet war. There was a period of quiet, really, where we got bombed occasionally, but nothing much. The Gallant came in with her bears blown off, but we were remote from it until Italy came in. They came in. And we had, they were at the pictures at the time, the fleet used to run a cinema show for us, you know. And most of the warders were down there, and they suddenly, the prison, a detention barracks, as we knew it, was we let all the prisoners out at 7 o'clock that evening before they went to the pictures. I didn't go to the pictures, but they let the let the prisoners out. And I remember speaking to some of them, particularly the Irish, said that we're fighting for our lives, mister. If you want to be a nuisance to this country, you'd be a nuisance, but we'd rather you didn't. Your fate will be bound with ours in the end. So for God's sake, behave yourself. And, you know, stick it out as best you can, because we're in trouble too. And try to talk sense into them before they left. Which I probably think probably did some good. Imagine the front of the detention barracks. They were called out of the pictures at the cinema, and imagine that the front of this with a lot of wailing women crying, internees coming in, being used as an internment camp.
What nationalities were interned?
Oh, Italians. I had a captain of a ship. I had a Roddy, a full crew of the Roddy there. Jews. Finns. Maltese, who were on the entire side of Italy. This was with the Italian War being declared, I'm talking about now. And trying to censor these people and find out whether they're any damn nuisance or not. We didn't know. It just give you a full section of people. And shortly after this, of course, France collapsed. And I had a French submarine's crew stuck on me. You imagine this great horde of a mixture of people, some of which were spies, obviously. Some weren't. You didn't know what to believe. One bloke was supposed to be a church singer. You didn't know whether he was a church singer. You had to look at them and kind of check up and imagine what they would do, what they were. Some were obviously scared out of their wits, of course, with the bombs dropping. Or the bombs did drop the next morning. Of course, you had the prerogative to listen to everything they said. I had an interpreter given me. And You listened to all their conversation. If you thought it was worthwhile, you presented it to the DSO, Defence Security Officer. And knowing Jock Harrell, which I did, and knowing he was the Sergeant Major of that establishment, it was... there was a certain amount of confidence between us. On one occasion, for instance, in order to get information to the enemy, and this meant lives, I discovered that you could search who you like, when you like. I did nothing barbaric or anything, it was above board. I had one dear landy. His father was Doctor the King of Egypt at that period. And he was of some consequence. He could speak several languages. He was a ACAC officer in the Italian army. We had pilots shot down who came in, two, Balsano and Manelli. Manelli had fought in the Spanish Civil War, and he was quite brave. Balsano was, said he'd only been taking photographs, where he thought that would make us a little bit more kind to him, God knows. Burgess, the man who shot him down, our pilot, in the Gladiator, remember we only had three Gladiators, sent him in 50 fags each. And generally speaking, you had a flock, a large flock of very frightened people. No doubt about it, very scared. And when the French submarine's crew came in, which it did, because they, shortly after Italy coming in the war, because Italy made sure that they were going to be reasonably well off if they came in, they thought they'd play their cards. And D'Orlandi assisted me to communicate with these people, because it's difficult. You've got to see, tell them where the toilets are, what is expected of them, where to go in the case of a raid, what to do for their dinner. There's a million things. The whole of England, Churchill was flying around like a bat out of hell, going across to France, trying to negotiate with French, dial in the fleet and all this junk, and he must have been out of his, really, at his wit's end. A poker player par excellence, which he was.
What did you have to tell your prisoners, to your internees, to do in the event of a raid?
Well, I wouldn't lock them up. Two men were eventually killed locked up, but I was not in my section. I would not do it. Berger, Captain Berger of the Roddy, was a sea captain, and a good one. You felt this awful sorrow for the man. He said, it's a terrible moment for us when you're locked up. Well, the chap was the army fellow who would lock people up at night. So let them lock them up, let them, the bomb's dropping like hell. Well, I wouldn't do it. I said, no, it will not happen when I take over, which I shall, because I was told I was going to be seconded to the Maltese government. And I wouldn't lock people up. He said, it's a terrible moment. I said, you won't be locked up tomorrow because I should be in charge, which I was.
Did you have any trouble by not locking them up?
Oh, no, I was the boss. Anybody could come to the dockyard if they didn't like it, because they could come and take over, because the bombs were dropping like hell. 30,000 tons of bombs dropped there. Nobody wanted to come and see me. They wanted to make sure I was all right from a distance. Better that way. And my wife and kids were there. There were three ladies stayed in that dockyard. Three. And my wife was last to leave. Flew over Alamein. So,
what did you tell the prisoners to do in the raids? Did you have shelters?
No. Well, there was one section, what is known as the specials. A special's locked three times. When you turn the key, you turn it three times. One, two, three. And the blooming great bolt goes in and locks them up.
Who were the specials?
No, if you punishment, for instance. One chap was sent to me for trying to punch the chap in charge of the Rabat prison. They had another internment camp, which was central and away from the bombing. The intensity of the bombing on the aerodrome and the intensity of the bombing on the detention quarters and the lockyard was intense. You know, you could stand and watch 200 bombers attack, for instance, the aerodrome. You could stand and watch that in reasonable safety. Or you could the dockyard, whoever's going to get it. And
what air raid precautions did you have?
Well, I eventually, I was going to describe the prison itself and three, it had a moat. You must remember, Malta's like that lump of cheese you see with all the holes in. Sandstone is a wonderful protection against bombing. It's like a sandbag, only in lumps. Because it sustains a certain amount of the explosion, muffles it, and it was wonderful. The moat round the dockyard, which I didn't know was there, I'd been there 3 years, didn't know it was there, was supreme in defence, wonderful. And one German prisoner escaped this side from the other section. I never lost anybody. He tried to roll down the moat onto a bush, and the bush didn't protect him, and he broke his leg. Consequently, he laid in the moat with a broken leg. And Bill Ryder, one of my tennis mates, found him there on patrol. Navy chap, head and hat on the back of his head, with a 303 rifle in his hand, wandering around, poking around. And Bill Ryder found him, this chap laying in the moat. Of all the people to find him, no military precision there. A loose naval attitude. Bill Ryder, never forget it. Already moaning, he said. I said, well, what happens when you lock people up at night in the prison? You go along, if you lock them up, you go along and bang the doors. When you bang the door, one, you secure, you say, well, that door is shut. And you know that you count the number of people that are in, and you say, they're locked up for the night. Keys are most important in a prison. You form up and the bloke report, you report all the keys up. Keys, you're all locked up in another case, you see. Anyway, this chap complained that he had a stomach ache. Pilot, German pilot. And then, having realised how the prison was locked up, he put his back against it and waited for the bang. He fiddled a lot during this period that he said he had a stomach ache. And consequently, the chap who locked them up thought he was still locked up. But he wasn't, because he'd had his back against it. I adopted a far more loose but secure method. All prisons are built with the control from the middle, like a Union Jack. You stand right in the middle and you can look down all corridors and see what's happening down all of them. And so this chap, anyway, he escaped. I had Central, or West, Royal West Kent Regiment chaps, there a few of them, under me, and I posted them in the middle with a 303 rifle. And there are grill doors to the centre. So you can stand in the centre, but still with all the doors locked in the section is locked off. And that was the method I employed.
Did you recapture him?
Oh, yeah, of course you recaptured. I didn't take him. He went back to the other side. Eventually, they deemed that I mustn't have prisoners because the DSO visited me and he said I had prisoners mixed with internees, which was wrong. nasty. But I did have Italian, three Italian chaps, pilots, and others besides. Of course, Di Orlandi was a prisoner of war, officially. He was caught on the Roddy with Berger.
What did the internees do during the day?
Well, you had to keep them amused, particularly the Irish. I had six Irishmen stuffed in there. Not happy, not an easy job, because you had Jews, Irishmen, French submarines crew, Roddy crew. I had the leading violinist of the Viennese orchestra. I never heard him play. I'd like to have done. But
were there activities arranged for them?
Oh, yes. I bought Halma, chess. Used to play Dorlandi chess. He used to say, non pulibunt. I said, what does non pulibunt mean? He'd say, they shall not prevail. I thought to myself, that's what you think. And Gabau was an ex-Worcester Regiment major, I believe, interned. Wolf interned. If ever you really wanted a patient full of trouble, you wanted Wolf. My wife and children were eventually at the Supreme Court of Malta over him. He attacked me with a stone. And of course, it's a big moment when you get somebody attacking with a stone. You've got a revolver that you can blow his stomach out if you want. What do you do? Do you shoot him? If you do, do they say this is typical of the English and the way they act? Or do you wrestle with him? Well, I threw him on the ground. Well, I didn't draw me a revolver. Don't forget you had the Irish as an audience just to make matters a little bit more difficult for you. Nobody was interested, not particularly interested. It was yours, you could have it. The dockyard was yours, all the bombs were yours.
What happened to Wolf after he attacked you?
They deported them all, and eventually. And I took over another prison at a school.
Why were the French submarine crew interned?
Because France had thrown in. Bewildering, dear. Can you imagine it? You got our leaders, not me, not Colour Sergeant Bethel-Arum, two penny worth of cold tea, nothing. Our leaders were at full stretch. They were glad of someone to say, here, imprison them, take them, keep them quiet. You'll be pleased if you'll just stab them. Just hold them there for a while we stop and think.
How well did the different nationalities mix in the internment camp?
Well, this is a question of fairly well, really. I was bewildered. Briffa de Pira, my immediate superior at that time, was a Maltese. He was bewildered. They were all bewildered. They were very glad to see somebody who looked reasonably happy. So I said to Briffa de Pira, shall I give him a concert? He said, I don't know whether it's a good idea or not. You can do if you like. So I arranged a concert. And my wife and two kids were naturally, wife was intermediate on the piano, and the two kids have been with a big children's dancing. Sunshine Kiddies of Gosport were quite famous in their time. Both of them had to appear in London in the finals of the dancing and singing act.
Were you not worried about your wife and your children being in Malta at this time?
Very. The opportunity had been given for them to leave. Okay. Person I'd have sent them home and they got sunk on the way, or sent them home and they'd been bombed in Gosport. Because don't forget, at this period, the Blitz was on England and London. And yes, I was worried, very worried. But you had to, it was a big act, wasn't it? You had to put on a big act. You had to make it. For instance, I went to Hindafear, where I won the shot of the year. I wasn't allowed to maintain the trophy because I wasn't an empty eye. But this was an old grievance. Anyway, when I came back, Sharp, one of the big shots, on gas, and really frightened the guts out of the women. He said, "Oh God, when mustard gas comes." And of course, even my wife, who was sweet right through, and the two girls were scared. And I crushed him because I said, "This gas will be no gas. Because what they can do to us, we can do to them." The situation had become
How frequent were the bombing raids?
Very frequent. The Italian bombing was high-level stuff, but it was frightening, all right, for the kids. And our own barrage made such a bloomin' noise.
How many casualties were there in the prison?
No, none whatsoever. Two died. But and one left me and went to Rabat, where he thought it was safe. I was eventually sent to the aerodrome to deliver petrol to the Spitfires with the prisoners who wanted to get away from the aerodrome. They said, "If we can get away, we'll be happy. We don't send us to prison by all means, but don't leave us on the aerodrome." Two regiments filling in bomb holes. A bit worrying at times. Now,
what were the Spitfires in Malta?
We had no Spitfires at that period. We had three Gladiators. We eventually got Spitfires, and we had, first of all, the Hurricanes, which were inadequate against the Messerschmitt. The Messerschmitt could handle that, and there weren't adequate enough of them. One, the London squadron, which was there with us, were brave, and they were wonderful. They were the only Hurricanes that could really hold their own. This was just prior to Japan coming in the war. To get this all chronologically assembled is most difficult because event after event, we had watched Norway fall, Holland, Belgium, France, Crete, Egypt, you name it, we watched it happen. The internees used to gloat. Remember, here you had an internment camp which really wanted your downfall. And with Hercules, which was a code name for the attack on Malta when they were going to take Malta, there was internees came in there and told their wives, the wives told them that Malta would fall within the fortnight. And they were secretly so sure of this. And I was far, far in advance of what actually happened, because I knew. I said to them, "Listen, Russia must go to war with Germany, whatever happens.